Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Si White.
Hello.
Hello, and joined by Josh Brown.
Hello.
Hello, some of the best of us to talk about what's going on in the gaming industry. Now, there's various sort of smaller news items, rumblings, rumours, things that are going around, that I think we can flesh out into a few different talking points. So, we've already talked a lot about Horizon this week. Me and Josh covered it on the Monday wind-up. We're doing the review for the Borning, for the Borning Shores
the
deal.
The Borning Shores.
It's Borning all those shores, mate. So you want to go and check that out over on the YouTube channel, the Borning Shores DLC review by Josh Brown. But Horizon's doing the rounds in general. Horizon Part 3, or whatever the hell we're calling Aloy's next game, has been sort of accidentally or quite sort of inconsequentially confirmed in amongst a bunch of other rumors from Guerrilla Games, talking about one of their key staff, their studio director and executive producer Angie Smets, going over to PlayStation Studios. Now, they had to do a whole statement saying that she was leaving the company, but in amongst saying that, they said that their new leadership will steer Guerrilla towards a bright future, expanding the world of Horizon with Aloy's next adventure and our exciting online project.
Scott,
so I kind of wanted to just... What?
It has been actual years since I've done one of these podcasts or videos and not known one of the news angles. I miss this entirely. This is all new to me. I feel excited. This has never happened. I'm buzzing.
Yeah. So this whole thing, I want to talk about Horizon. I mean, we've talked so much about Horizon, but I want to talk about Horizon in general, because me and Si, we're both in the same place here, because we both loved Zero Dawn. We got through Forbidden West. It was all right. I think I'm way more negative on it than you. So far, I've not finished the Burning Shores stuff. But overall, with Horizon, I wrote down the amount of things they've got, the amount of irons they've got in the fire now, because obviously we knew there was going to be another main installment, the assumption being that Horizon would be a trilogy or something. So you have whatever the next main game is, you have the online multiplayer spin-off, which some gameplay for that's leaked, but obviously it's super early in development. You've got the Netflix TV show, and we just got the Horizon Call of the Mountain VR experience for the PSVR 2. Where'd you come down as a Zero Dawn fan or a Horizon fan in general? How are you finding the expanded world of Horizon?
This all makes sense to me. Like, mm-hmm. From the off, it seemed like a franchise where I was like, there's so much opportunity here for sort of extended universe stuff.
Yeah.
And the list you run off there, some of it sounds like, okay, logical, I like it. We can get like an online game that's unexpected, but cool. Mm-hmm. The VR game, that makes sense. You're playing as a different character. That's nice. I'd like to explore more of that universe. Some of it's a little bit weird where it comes to sort of like the show where it's a bit of a retread. I'm a bit concerned about that sort of stuff, mm-hmm. but... Yeah, I mean, it seems like a series that could do with this kind of thing, but it does feel like there's ramp from 0 to 60 in about a second, doesn't it?
Like, it makes me think of
you don't realise how much stuff is going on until you list it all like that and you go, wow, that's a lot of stuff.
I know, it's like, you know when, was it CDPR sort of came out and were like, hey, we're going to do like 10 projects and it's like,
yeah,
like two trilogies and whatever, and you get a project and you get a project. And I'm just like, that's a cool way to go, but I think with Sony at the minute, because they have this whole push towards PlayStation Studios, which is where Angie Smets is going to, she's going to be the head of development strategy, and their development strategy seems to be, can we make a TV show, can we make a movie, can we do all these things all at once? That feels like what the Jim Ryan era just is with Sony. Josh, what are you thinking? It blindsided you.
I was saying to you just in the office the other day, Scott, that Sony freaking loves guerrilla games. Like you said, you know, we've had this promotion here to, you know, a more general but higher up kind of position within PlayStation as a studio. You had Herman Hultz a few years ago, you know, getting promoted as well, and now overseeing so many other studios apart from Guerrilla Games. And, you know, they obviously love the people who are making the Horizon games, and they love the Horizon games themselves. And have done what Si was saying there, you know, rocketing it up as a franchise from 0 to 60 so fast. I love Horizon content. I liked Forbidden West a lot. I liked the VR game a lot. You know,
I was going to ask you about the VR stuff. Yeah,
it's really good, but it's classic Horizon where you kind of play it and you think this is really good, but is it amazing? Maybe not. You know, it's got a lot to it. Like Si was saying, you know, it is really exciting to see this world from another perspective that isn't just Aloy's, and also seeing how small Aloy is from that perspective. By the way, she's really tiny, and you're like so much taller than her, which is really cool. I like that a lot. But as like the core franchise, I don't know where you two fall on this, but we were talking the other day, Scott, and I reiterated this in my review of Burning Shores. But I kind of feel like they've pushed the formula they have now to complete breaking points. So when it comes to Horizon 3, I want to see a major overhaul. I don't think I can take the game as it is again, because while it is good, it's almost got to an Assassin's Creed level for me where
I have... It is very like Assassin's Creed.
Absolutely. You know, I've had this meal so many times, and I don't think I need it a third time unless you radically change the ingredients and serve me something else.
The thing that I was curious about with the VR thing is that do you play as a custom character in that, or you just play as someone who isn't Aloy?
Yeah, you just play as a new named character whose name I have forgotten, but they have their own, you know, distinct story and background. Right, okay. Yeah.
Because I'm just curious, because it's like we have the online multiplayer thing coming up, which I know it's like I said, it's super early gameplay that's been leaked for it, but a lot of the stuff with Horizon's gameplay just kind of feels like Monster Hunter. And it's like, how do we get in on the Monster Hunter thing and twin that with Assassin's Creed and have this sort of sci-fi, you know, backdrop, and you have all these different machines and everything, but the gameplay, especially if you start factoring in multiple players, it's going to feel a lot more like Monster Hunter. And then it's like, how did the first Horizon project that wasn't with Aloy, how did that feel? Like, I guess because it's VR, they need to give you a blank slate, but I'm just curious, like, how big and how wide do they want this to be? Because I always thought Horizon was Aloy's story, and I guess they kind of wrap up the trilogy and then maybe you go off with other characters and stuff.
Yeah, Aloy's a funny character because she's so advanced and so overpowered. Kind of overpowered right now. She is filling that hero archetype, and I really like her. Burning Shores in particular kind of reignited my love for her as a character, and I think that she has way more development that's possible than I kind of thought was possible during Forbidden West, or at least my playthrough through Forbidden West, where she kind of fell to the background, and I didn't really love her story in that or her characterization. I kind of felt like her arc was completed in one, and she kind of just meandered a little bit. That's just my thoughts. Those are just my thoughts. But then she kind of came back again. So I want more Aloy stories, whether that's as the playable character or more of a legacy character, I'm not entirely sure. But I think that I would like to see her kept around, whether it's as a playable protagonist or just as someone who is still integral to the story but takes on a more periphery role, kind of like maybe a Silence as he does in the first two games.
It's funny actually, because I said the same thing to you, didn't I, Scott, the other day? Like, you know, we were meant to be talking about Horizon 3 a bit, but jumping forward, like after the first trilogy, my sort of dream for it would be to play as another character and Aloy sort of fulfill that Obi-Wan Kenobi kind of role a little bit.
Yes.
Like, she is integral to the world, you're absolutely right. But they need to try telling other stories, and the story of Zero Dawn is its biggest strength. And I think the story of, for the most part, of Forbidden West was kind of its biggest failing for me. So they need to tell some really great stories, and they've really got to focus on that and get that right and moving forward. So, yeah, stuff like where it is the online game, where I don't know how you inject a great story into that. I mean, I'm sure it's possible, but how you make Aloy a logical part of that as well is an odd one.
It's like, is she just like a timed skin that you can trigger for a bit or something?
Hero class, sort of. Like.
You just summon her and she helps you out or something. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like I don't know if we'll see it this year. I guess there's a whole thing. Another news item that I've got to get to is the general sort of idea of a PlayStation showcase. Because I feel like overall, there are a lot of different chess pieces being moved around for Sony to do this whole push into multiplayer. Like, they bought a couple of mobile devs. They just bought another one like last week or something. Very, very small devs. They also bought Bungie, but it wasn't because of the IPs that they own. It was because of the network. netcode that they own. They seem to want to push into all these multiplayer places. And we know that the next Last of Us is like this weird sort of single player, or it's able to be a satisfying single player, but it's also this multiplayer thing, factions or whatever. And it's like, it feels like there's this big like collective series of announcements that are going to happen where Sony want to push into this multiplayer space. And Horizon is obviously going to be one of those things where it's like, we'll have the online Last of Us. Ghost of Tsushima already kind of proved it, that you can do a Sony first party and make it work multiplayer with the, I thought you call that mode now, but the mode that's not the story one in Ghost of Tsushima. And I kind of wonder if that's what they're going to aim for and just try to roll out things like Horizon. It's not necessarily going to matter that it's Aloy because they're just going to focus on the gameplay side of it. How that lands, I think, is a whole other thing, because you're trying to compete with all these different services and everything, but yeah.
I was going to ask, is there anything else we know about the multiplayer experience? Like, do we know what kind of focus it's going to take? Because my natural assumption would be what you said there, kind of take the Ghost of Tsushima approach and have it be a more kind of co-op PvE experience, because at least in my head, that's... it's easily transferable over to that style of play, similar to the Monster Hunter comparison that you made. Totally. You know, the systems that are already in there lend themselves to the multiplayer grind, as it were, I think, with the loot and the different rarities and all of the coils you can plug in and the exploration and even some of the RPG elements. And I think if you add another character in there in co-op, I feel like if those characters are kind of custom made and you're trying to go through that process as your own distinct creation, you know, trying to level up, take down these creatures, take down these machines, that to me feels like a more natural fit rather than a PvP thing, because I just don't know if the combat of Horizon would work in PvP, or it might work, but it might not be fun.
No, I want to make a really weird suggestion here. What if they take influence from Pokemon and you have like... that size face contorts. What if they do, you know, limited creatures, limited monsters, shinies essentially, where they have a whole live platform and there's a specific type of a Thunderjaw or a specific mutation of a certain creature or whatever that's only available for that weekend or for that week or for that fortnight or something. And then you get, you and your squad get in there. I'm just trying to think of ways that you could AAA the Monster Hunter formula and ways that you could add live service elements to that formula, because Monster Hunter World was my absolute favorite. I've got over like 100 hours in that thing. And like, I wonder what you do to that to make it match the, oh my god, it's, you know, like, what else are we doing with this world? Like, these 3D printers that are everywhere in Horizon just made this weird creature, and if you bring it down, you get this thing. And I think maybe something like that would kind of work. Because, yeah, the leaked footage mostly just showed a character running around, but it very much looked like a custom character. I think it'd be weird if it was like Uncharted multiplayer, where you're sort of using a single player tool set against each other. I think it would have to be PvE.
Yeah, like the actual human combat in Horizon has never been its strong point, has it anyway? No. So if it was just you versus other human characters, that would be really, really weird. And also there are dinosaurs in the background, I guess. It would be really, really weird. Like, the Monster Hunter thing is absolutely the route they should go. Or... as a complete, just like to screw with everyone, just make like a RTS style, like tribes versus tribes kind of
like
thing.
That Striker thing they've got in Forbidden West. Is it Machine Strike or whatever? Like,
yeah,
do a big
but I was thinking basically just reskin Age of Empires with like the Horizon clans. Give me that. Like, I want that. I know it's never going to happen, but I'll take that over an Overwatch sort of
thing. If you say the words turn-based combat enough times in a row, Josh will leave the room. You've got to get it right. But
hey, if they do it like Gears Tactics, maybe I'll play it.
To be fair, that could work. I could see that.
But yeah, overall, it's just worth mentioning. Yeah, so to kind of use that as a pivot point into the overall thing that's happening with PlayStation, Jeff Grubb, sort of known insider, used to be at GamesP, at Giant Bomb, now known for breaking all sorts of things to do with the industry, mentioned on one of his most recent Games Mess podcasts that a PlayStation showcase could be happening in May. And he said, or at least before the Summer Games Fest, that's Jeff Keighley's summer thing, on June 8th. To twin that with one of the rumors for that showcase, Mortal Kombat 12 is apparently ready to be shown off. This is according to Xbox era's Nick Baker and Windows Central's Jez Corden, who both mentioned that Mortal Kombat 12 is coming in 2023. There are also various reports about Mortal Kombat 12 versus Injustice 3 and how internally they were, NetherRealm were chose to, told to prioritize MK12. But Baker said that he expects MK12 to be at the PlayStation showcase. And there's also mention of potential platform exclusivity as well. So I have to imagine that's a timed thing. That feels like Yeah.
It'd be kind of crazy, right? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if this is watertight, but Tekken was shown off at the PlayStation Showcase, you know, last year. So they're kind of aligning themselves with Tekken now. The Street Fighter 6 demo that just launched, I'm pretty sure launched on PlayStation platforms first. So they're aligning themselves with Street Fighter. Is that what I said? Street Fighter? Street Fighter 6, the demo?
Yeah,
that's what I meant to say if I didn't say that. And obviously Street Fighter 5 was exclusive. So if they're going to try to get Mortal Kombat as well, can they get away with getting all of the big three fighting games this year?
They can't keep getting away with
it. That would be crazy if they do manage to, you know, align themselves in one way or another, whether that's exclusivity or exclusive content or even just an advertising partnership with all three of those fighting games. But I wouldn't put it past them, especially when, you know, they're very much looking to respond to Microsoft's acquisition of Activision in a way that doesn't have them also spending $70 billion.
So what do you think of the whole their moves right now? Because they are up against all these, I don't know, Xbox just buying their way to the top.
It's a weird time, isn't it, for both the companies? Yeah. Like, I wouldn't take any side. I can't take any side. The whole thing's stupid, where it's like, mummy, mummy, they bought this toy. I'm no longer allowed to use it. I just can't stand
buy
it.
Buy the whole shop.
But, yeah. But, Josh, you're exactly right. It does feel like they've kind of... Microsoft are too busy. They're distracted doing this or that. We're going to buy these. And yeah, it's a weird thing. All potential three franchises. It seems like an odd timing thing as well, because obviously Street Fighter 6 is coming out in June, I think. So it does feel like, oh, Street Fighter 6 is going to come out. And then immediately we're going to hear about Mortal Kombat 12 as well. It's a strange time considering both of those franchises haven't had entries for years and years and years. Suddenly fighting games just, we've gone from nothing to everything. It actually seems like a bad thing in it when you look at it that way. Like, there's almost too much choice, right? It's like they're all going to suffer a little bit.
A little bit. See, I'm in heaven, but I'm hoping that it doesn't, like, botch, because there was that thing, was it a couple of years ago when we were going to have Halo Infinite, Battlefield 2042, and... Yeah, Call of Duty or whatever, all in the same year. And it was like, oh my God, the year of first-person shooters. I mean, we hardly ever have that. And now it's like the year of the fighting games, if Tekken 8 ends up coming out this year as well.
Right.
And it's that whole thing where I'm just like, I can take all of them. But at the same time, I think for Sony, like, it's a weird thing where Final Fantasy VII Remake still isn't on Xbox. And that's like a weird unspoken thing that was sort of set in motion. They locked it down or whatever. And there's a lot of conversations doing the rounds, or keep doing the rounds, as to Sony acquiring Square Enix or Sony acquiring Capcom, or like trying to do their version of a much bigger acquisition. And I think that's kind of interesting, because it's almost like they don't have to spend anywhere near as much money as Microsoft are trying to spend to win the optical argument. It's like, optics-wise, Final Fantasy is aligned with PlayStation, and now potentially Tekken, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, all is. They lock the pre-orders down. Like, they're already, like, winning, quote-unquote, without throwing $70 billion at the problem.
I'm not saying this is good for the industry by any means, but I'm saying this is a suave move, because Sony kind of spends their money a little bit more smartly than Microsoft, I think. And again, this doesn't mean they spend it in a good way, but they really go for fan favorite franchises. You mentioned Final Fantasy VII. They're obviously a hugely anticipated game that they lock down. They've got Final Fantasy 16 coming as a platform exclusive this year, a fan favorite game that they're locking down. You know, they are aligning themselves, like I said, with those fighting franchises. They're aligning themselves with Resident Evil by, you know, advertising the hell out of it and getting VR exclusive content for the PSVR all the way kind of like through the past few years. I think they've been kind of smart in terms of identifying what the hardcore fans really like and then trying to pinch those things. And again, I don't even think that's necessarily a good thing or should be commended, but I just think it's interesting the targets, for lack of a better term, that they single in on as a compared to Microsoft, who kind of just go, well, people love Bethesda and Activision, we'll buy them wholesale, you know, we'll just get them all in.
Exactly that.
Strange.
It makes you wonder, because Silent Hill 2, that we know of, the remake, whenever it's going to come out, Windows, I think, and PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
I don't know about any of the further Silent Hill games that they revealed, like F and stuff, if they've announced what systems they're going to be on, but it might be that that's an exclusive thing for PlayStation for Silent Hill, or even just for this sort of new era of reborn Konami. Metal Gear Solid 3 apparently is getting a remake.
That's
could
true.
Be another PlayStation exclusive. Castlevania is apparently getting another game. Could be PlayStation exclusive. Exactly right on the money with like those hardcore classic studios that everybody has various amounts of love and nostalgia for.
It's like a weird thing as well where, you know, timed exclusives used to be like the most hated thing. Like, I remember when Tomb Raider, I forget what you call the middle one now, the one that, you know, after we did the whole reboot and then it was like the
Rise.
Rise of the Tomb Raider was like locked down on Xbox, and it was like, oh my God, guys, you've killed it. I can't believe you've done this. And like that franchise sort of struggled a bit. Obviously, there was different artistic directions and everything, but whatever. But then Sony do it all the time, and everyone just kind of, it's like Nintendo's reaction. It's like, oh, you, oh, whatever. Oh, you've done it again. You've locked it down, you scamps. And it's just like, okay, fine. But obviously, timed exclusives are only sort of a, I don't know, like a bandage over the problem, let's say, if we're going to be entering into this whole back and forth of how many different teams can you lock down.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I don't think Sony's kind of, maybe they are interested in buying those big studios and these big franchises, and maybe they just don't have the same amount of resources to throw around like Microsoft can with, you know, their billion-dollar acquisitions. But if you look at, you know, over the past year, the acquisitions they have made, obviously Bungie was a huge one, and then Insomniac before then, but recently they've been buying quote-unquote smaller studios, studios that they've kind of cultivated from the ground up or had an investment in beforehand, and then bringing them into the fold. They just bought, is it Firesprite last week?
Firewalker,
who's obviously ex-Bungie devs and Respawn devs and all of that stuff, getting into like the first-person space alongside Bungie, who I've already mentioned. And it's interesting to see their approach compared to Microsoft, where they are kind of more interested in having partnerships with big studios first before they buy them outright. I mean, how long did it take them to buy Insomniac or convince Insomniac to get bought by them? And otherwise,
the most insane acquisition of all time as well. Like, they paid like £20 for Insomniac, and they've made them Spider-Man and everything. Like, it's nowhere near.
And even then, they waited for them to make Spider-Man for them. Like, it's hard to... it's easy to forget that, like, Spider-Man at the time was, like, a second-party game. Like, they didn't own that studio then. It was only when that was so successful, they were like, okay, after 20 years, you've proven yourself. We'll give you $200 million coming into the fold. But that said, I think the second-party kind of approach has been working for them, because this year alone, I think their lineup is very strong, not necessarily from a first-party perspective, but you've got you know, the two Final Fantasy games coming, you've got Spider-Man 2, you've just had Burning Shores, and then you've probably got stuff that hasn't been announced. You've got other stuff they took a gamble on, like Forspoken, that they probably didn't get that much blowback for because it was second party and they didn't finance it, you know, through a first party studio. They weren't all in on Forspoken, so they could kind of take that experiment. And that said, while I do think their lineup is strong, I need to see more from them. I was telling you the other day, Scott, in the office, I was lamenting over the fact that we have not seen a Sony showcase outside of the State of Players in a long, long time. And going into the end of the year, once we get these big drops for Final Fantasy, Spider-Man, what's next? We can guess that there's going to be a Ghost of Tsushima 2, Horizon 3, probably, you know, the God of War at some point. But what's imminent? What's the roadmap? What do people need to buy a PlayStation 5 for once they've already got Final Fantasy and Spider-Man?
Yeah, man. That's the thing. I mean, for the rest of this year, I mean, if we do like a blanket question, like, what do you want to see from a PlayStation showcase right now? And when you think about the stuff that they already have locked in for the rest of the year, mainly only Spidey 2. I don't think I'm forgetting anything that's on that level. But it feels like if you think about Xbox, it's Starfield, Redfall's a lot more imminent. There's potential for Avowed. Like, you know, there's Forza's meant to be this year. But like on the PlayStation side, it's sort of just like vagaries of things that might come true. I'll throw in here that Fumito Ueda mentioned that he's ready to show, he wants to show off his next game. Fumito Ueda, the heads up Gen Design, they're the dudes that did Ico, Shadow of the Colossus, and the magnificent The Last Guardian, to give it its full official name. And he said in December last year that he's ready to show off their next game in 2023. And so that started doing the rumors, doing the rounds again in regards to rumors and things that might be ready to show off at a showcase. I wonder how much sway that has, but I guess any sort of like solid trailer can bring people back on board. But you know, The Last Guardian was in development for 10 years or whatever it was, so it's like they need to get it right this time. But yeah,
this is where I ask the question to you two: are we old? Does the name Ueda have the sway that it once was when The Last Guardian was coming out, and you know, it felt like a big deal? I remember even then, in 2013 or whatever it was, people were asking, well, is the era of this team, of this developer, of Shadow of Colossus, Ico, and everything else already feeling a little bit antiquated? Has the indie space kind of come in and picked up that baton and ran with it? Like, is this more... would that be a more of a niche win for like older fans, perhaps, rather than a kind of blanket mainstream, oh yeah, we've just nabbed Kojima or something like that, you know?
Well, I guess, Sally, what do you think? Because I've got a specific thought on this.
Yeah, I don't think so at this point, partly because of The Last Guardian sort of lack of holding power. It wasn't really... it doesn't get talked about at all at this point. Like, it'd be easy to forget that it even happened, to be honest, which is crazy considering, as you're right, it took like 11 years or something to come out. And I just wonder, yeah, that kind of gameplay, that kind of storytelling, so many other companies have been inspired by, in particular Shadow of the Colossus and stuff like that. Unless they've got something really unexpected up their sleeve, it is just going to be like, hey, it's another one of those. We waited 6 years for this. Like, it's,
yeah.
And not to be mean about it, but like, I'm hopefully it's something really surprising. But it might just be kind of a quaint little addition to the PlayStation's lineup when we look back on it in a few years, and not like a big system seller like it probably should be.
That's the thing. It's like thinking about, because for me, it's like there's a mid-tier of their development that they're sort of missing at the minute, and there's not that many games that fit into it. Journey was a massive deal in 2011, 2012 or whatever, and that sort of proved that they could do that. And then obviously the indie boom was like 2013 onwards, and they've never really looped back around to that. Like, they sort of used to be able to get the likes of Shadow of the Colossus out there and Journey and sort of mid-tier games. Like, Concrete Genie was absolutely buried. Not that it's the same in terms of tone, but that was sort of a first party. I'm pretty sure it was a first party. It was at least second party, definitely PlayStation exclusive. Little sort of platformer with a really cool art-based idea that just gets completely buried and barely ever talked about, but it is a PlayStation exclusive. And I welcome that mid-tier of development, especially if they're pushing into big AAA, you know, Monster Hunter Horizon platform stuff, and Last of Us is online all the time. I'd love that mid-tier of stuff that I'll actually finish. That would be nice.
Hey, I will interject and say that I still think that's around in a way. It has been minimized, I think you're right. But just in the last few years, I could think of like Kena, Bridge of Spirits, and Stray last year, especially, that, you know, we might not have loved, especially on this podcast, but, you know, a lot of people did. You know, we're still winning awards and stuff. So
that's a really good point.
Whether you are right, though, that they used to pump these things out all the time and like have a really big spotlight for them. And now it does feel like when a Stray comes along, you know, it gets a lot of attention, but you kind of think like, oh, yeah, remember when this was almost their bread and butter, where you had this kind of mid-tier all the time? But I wonder if the success of Stray and Kena, you know, makes them kind of double down on that stuff again.
No, man, totally. I think they sort of like, didn't they swoop in and finish off Stray? It was already like a really small project, like two people or something, and they sort of came in and like a wad of cash at the door and was like, there you go, finish your game kind of thing, versus some of the other examples. But I guess overall, I think someone like Fumito Ueda would be really good to showcase. Like, you mentioned Kojima before in terms of like another auteur to have as part of the PlayStation brand. Maybe we'll get more Death Stranding too if we sort of talk about like wider, what do you want to see from the showcase stuff. But yeah, they could do with with sort of reminding people just how many things they have to show off. Something like a Death Stranding would be sweet.
Oh my god, I'm so pleased you mentioned Death Stranding 2, because when I was playing through Burning Shores, obviously both games use the Decima engine, I was thinking, as much as I was enjoying Burning Shores, I was thinking, oh my god, I can't wait to see this, you know, next-gen engine in Death Stranding 2. That's going to be a game for me. So please, Sony, you know, email me the next trailer for that early, please. I want to see the work in progress.
Give me the MP4. Speaking of a game that'll be for you, one word, Lawbreakers. Do you want some Lawbreakers? Remember Lawbreakers? Do you want that?
I don't know, man. I don't think I do. No?
Sai, do you want some Lawbreakers? Did you get in on the Lawbreakers
hype? Literally, when you sent the podcast notes over quickly before we recorded, I was like, I'm going to have to watch some YouTube on this, because I'm not entirely sure what this game was.
Oh my God, if you weren't around at the time. Lawbreakers, for anyone else who hasn't caught up on what this... It was a game.
It was a game.
Was Cliff Bleszinski's whole thing after making Gears of War. I don't think he did anything in between, unless I'm blanking on something. Oh, no, he did Bulletstorm.
Yeah.
And then he was like, this whole thing. Everyone should just watch the Kirby Cat video. That's a really good time lapse of all the announcements, all the trailer, all the hype and everything. Lawbreakers is one of the most catastrophic failures of modern times. There's a lot of money put into it. It was a sort of first person arena shooter, kind of like Doom if you added a lot more aerial combat to it. Point being that the game massively bombed. It was a whole laughing stock at the time. But very recently, and I forget what started this, I remember just seeing the tweets from Cliffy B over on Twitter just saying people seem to be caring about Lawbreakers again, and then a lot of the comments going, oh my god, if you brought it back, I would play it, I can't wait to play that. And so that led to him apparently getting in touch. He initially said he didn't know who owned the rights to it, because his entire Boss Key Productions, his entire company went under after Lawbreakers and after a failed battle royale called Radical Heights, which sadly couldn't save them. He had to sell all that stuff off, and then he's now recently gone back and found where the Lawbreakers IP is residing, which apparently is with Nexon, and he's tweeted saying he's organizing a conversation with someone from Nexon to apparently relaunch Lawbreakers, which to a specific sect of the online people will be a very, oh my god, no. Morbius the video game.
I was just about to say, do you know what the last time it was when someone listened to the internet and what they apparently wanted and re-released something? It was Morbius, and look how well that worked for Sony. I don't think...
Hey, it outsold Shazam, my friend. Don't worry about it.
Lawbreakers. Potentially controversial opinion. I never played it, but obviously you watched that Krabby Cat video and the comparisons to Overwatch absolutely killed that thing dead. I wonder now, in a sort of post-Overwatch world where Overwatch 2 is there, but it's not the behemoth that it was, in the late 2010s, I wonder with that kind of not being in the spotlight as much, Lawbreakers can have a chance, because it's not having that direct competition. It's not going up against this giant in the same way it was previously that just ate everything. You know, not just Lawbreakers, the likes of Battleborn were also victim to Overwatch's immense success. All of these games trying to do what it did, but them just not finding any space because it was so all-encompassing. I wonder whether it would fare better now. Is that enough justification to bring it back from the dead and track down the IP rights? I don't know, man. Don't know.
Yeah, it's funny.
I'm curious.
People talking about Lawbreakers, quote-unquote. Three people is technically people, yes. But, yes. I don't know if it's enough to,
Do you know what? Unlike Twitter, I imagine Cliffy B's gone onto his trending page and gone, oh my god, Lawbreakers is trending. There's 2,000 tweets about it, forgetting that he's on the For You tab. He's not on the worldwide tab. He's gone on his interests, and his interest is Lawbreakers.
Elon Musk's Twitter strikes again.
2,000 tweets by the same handful of people. It's not really, still a lot of confidence. Obviously, kidding aside about it, you have to wonder, because... Is anyone interested in necessarily going back into the space that Overwatch has kind of, as you rightly said, Josh, doesn't occupy so much anymore, because people have sort of lost interest in it? Have people lost interest in it specifically because of Overwatch 2 wasn't what they wanted or whatever? Or is its time as a genre right now in the sun kind of passed over a little bit? Are you just dooming yourself to literally Morbius it? Because people, they're not going to necessarily come back now that there isn't something else to distract them in the form of a similar game. They're just going to be playing, I don't know, whatever else. They're just
That boom was so strong. Obviously 2016, we've just said, Overwatch did destroy everything, but Overwatch 2 was so catastrophic. And the thing is with Lawbreakers, to me, it was always sold almost it's more like Doom. It's more like Doom Eternal, especially because Eternal was way more acrobatic in itself. And I'm blanking on the name of, Josh, what's that heavy metal Doom-like game that you liked?
Metal Hellsinger?
Yes, Metal Helsing. That managed to do all right. And it's like that idea of acrobatic first person, nicely kinetic action. I think there's a space for that. Because there's not that many comparisons between Lawbreakers and Overwatch, at least from the offset. Like, you have a couple of character designs that look similar. The actual flow of the game, I think, is far more like a Doom.
I'd be more interested in a Lawbreakers 2. I think Lawbreakers has had its day. It has a reputation that's going to be difficult to shift in the mainstream outside of these supposed and apparently real hardcore fans. But I think a Lawbreakers 2, maybe in like Unreal Engine 5, that is built from the ground up, is kind of wiping the slate clean. That would intrigue me more rather than reviving this old dead game that has a bad reputation.
Right, okay.
100%. I wouldn't even call it Lawbreakers 2. Like, I would spiritual successor it, right, kind of thing. Like, just pretend, don't look over here, look this way instead sort of situation. Don't remember that, look at this.
To be fair, like, one of the biggest issues was the marketing. It was the lead-up. Yeah. It was Cliffy getting way too Cliffy in all the interviews beforehand. Whereas if you just sort of wipe the slate clean and go, the next IP from the creator of Gears of War, yeah, and then you just jump into the footage and you just don't even acknowledge that it was a thing before. Maybe that's a way forward. Final news item, which I think by the time this podcast goes live will have happened, but it's the hot happening topic on the streets of the UK's CMA finally approving the Microsoft Activision Blizzard deal. I mentioned this at the very end of the podcast because we've all talked about it ad infinitum. But apparently this Wednesday / today when this podcast goes out, and the Financial Times are reporting that in advance that the UK's CMA will actually be approving that deal. So it's over a year on from when they first said we'll pay $69 billion for all of that IP. That's apparently finally closing.
I now realize how monopolies happen, right? Because I am not personally involved with this process, and I'm sick of hearing it. I'm ground into the ground with it. No, yeah, that's not a phrase, but you know what I mean. I'm over it.
Grounded.
I'm sick of hearing about it. I'm sick of the pissing contests between all of these companies, between all of these agencies, the kind of mud throwing at each other from Phil Spencer and Jim Ryan, the leaked documents, the trials and what have you, and people trying to figure out what video games are from these authorities because they don't know, and they're like, please tell me what a video game is, what's monetization, what's a loot box, what's a season pass. It's just been a little bit exhausting, so I'm kind of one way or another, I'm wanting there to be a kind of line drawn under it so we can move on as an industry, because it's just
as a people,
maybe that's a privileged thing to say, because it's like, okay, I just want to not hear about it, but man, like, I'm sick of hearing about it.
I definitely think that only weirdos like us kept up with it that much. I think the average person on the street wouldn't even know what was going on unless you sort of told them, hey, by the way, all these other games are about to become Xbox exclusive. But Si, thoughts on this ridiculous deal?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, really. We've all just kind of said how there's some amount of disdain for this kind of behavior, but it is very much just like, just if you're going to do it, get on with it, please. Yeah. Just like, can we move on and just get the games out and start talking about the games again, please? Like, it's just... Yeah, it's
maybe
been,
Xbox
it's
can finally give us a yeah, give us like a bigger slate of things that are coming as well. Once they finally know where the likes of Elder Scrolls or whatever's going to land, and they can start planning those things out.
That's my question, right? Will this acquisition fix Xbox? Because my opinion is no. You've seen all of the studios that they've bought, and I know I kind of cut them a lot of slack because it takes so much time to buy a company, to realign that company, and then get a game out. And we're only 10 years out from the Xbox One launching, you know, from the Don Matrick era, from Phil Spencer even coming in and starting to change things around. When you look at the timeline from that perspective, I don't think it's, you know, unfair to cut Xbox some slack in terms of their turnout. That said, when you look at their apparent mismanagement of even their biggest franchises like Halo, which they have not done a good job with, not really...
Perfect Dark's not even off the starting blocks.
Yeah. Don't get me even started on Perfect Dark and Fable and everything else, but Halo and 343 Studios and the tumultuous process that that franchise and that studio has gone through, it just doesn't fill me with a lot of... you know, optimism that them taking on a behemoth like Activision Blizzard King will allow them to focus on the games. I hope so, because I mean, Activision Blizzard King was in a terrible position, and I don't think you could do any worse than that. And I hope the Microsoft acquisition, you know, helps those studios, helps those franchises become a little bit healthier. But I don't see this being the kind of like sort of ultimate win for Microsoft as a studio in the short term, maybe in the long term, but right now it's going to be another big process after 10 years of big processes and transformations.
Yeah.
Sure. Big Process is the name of our hit indie song, which you should check out. I think, my thing overall, and I'll point to an Xbox video that I put together, Cy thankfully edited for me. That whole thing's over on the YouTube channel, just because to check in on the state of Xbox and the fact that Game Pass only makes up 15% of their overall revenue, and Phil Spencer saying he never thinks that there'll be a point in time where that'll make up the entirety or something more close to 70 to 80% of their revenue. So it seems like even with $70 billion here, it's just bolstering what will always be 15% of a whole, but they're trying to make that hole bigger and trying to make Game Pass more worthwhile or whatever. Lots of boring business stuff. So I feel like once these things get out the way, we'll put some games in a different column and then we'll be able to move forward.
Now we've done this, who do they buy next? Because they don't stop here. They
Sony,
continue.
To be honest. Just scuba them up. Nintendo? I don't know. Get it done. But yeah, we'll keep an eye on it. I think by the time this thing goes live, all that stuff will have shaken out. Maybe something else will have got in the way. Maybe Jim Ryan will have leaked some more images of Phil Spencer or whatever he's going to do to get in the way of it. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Cy White.
Hello. Oh, goodbye, not hello. It's been a long day.
Good evening and goodbye. And also Josh Brown.
Goodbye, everyone.
And we'll catch you next week.
See ya. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.